You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning, I was joined by the former Palace and Charlton midfielder, Paul Mortimer. Morning.
Morning, my
friend. Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm absolutely fine. You?
Yeah. I mean, do you know why I made the noise when I sat down? You know, because I'm on you about making a noise
yep,
when I sat
exactly
down.
Exactly right.
Because I did 4 hours of gardening yesterday. Oh. Bloody hell, that's hard.
It's hard work. Four hours.
4 hours of gardening.
I lose interest after about an hour and a half.
Well, there was a lot of I essentially hadn't been in the garden.
Yeah.
For quite some time. Well, that's not actually true, right? I'll tell you what it is. I do things around the house when it gets too much for me, right? You know what I mean? So when I was doing, because I've been doing Pilates, and I've been doing Pilates, right? And I was doing a lot of it in the lounge. And I noticed when I was lying on the floor that it needed a hoover. Because right? Normally my head isn't at that level, right? So I went, well, I have to hoover. So my missus got home and said, oh, you've done a hoovering. I said, yeah, because it was bothering me. I felt it needed a hoover. That's not really the real truth. The real truth is my head was in the dust on the carpet, and I went, this needs sorting out. If I'm going to lie here, this needs sorting out. The rest of the family, they can do what they want, but I'm sorting this. Anyway, with the garden, because of the Pilates has opened up a whole new world of doing stuff around the house for me. Because of the Pilates, we set up a little, we've got a little sort of flash garden shed at the back of the back of the house. And I've been doing it in there, in the back of the shed. And, I mean, it's called a summer house.
Yeah.
But it is a shed, all right? I mean, but it's a nice shed.
Yeah,
it's a well-appointed
summer house.
It's a well-appointed summer house, but it's a shed. But because I've been walking through the garden every day doing it, I've noticed what a mess the garden is. I thought, right, I can't have it. I can't have it. I've started hoovering. Now I'm going to clear the garden. So I was out there from 12 till 4 yesterday.
Wow.
And I had to buy one of those big, like, bags to take all the grass, the rubbish down to the dump. I like going to the dump.
Went for it, did you?
Oh, probably. I love going to the dump, don't you?
What?
Really?
What's wrong with you?
I love the dump. How can you not love going to the dump?
Because it stinks.
No, I know that. I know that. And hey, no one's more sensitive than me.
You can catch anything down there,
no,
mate.
No, you can't. No
you
one's...
need to have your jabs before you go.
Stop it. Don't be ridiculous, Paul. Come on. It's a very nice. I like it. I like getting rid of stuff. That's the point. I like, what's the word? Divesting myself.
Yeah, I'm a hoarder. So.
Of are you?
I just keep loads of rubbish.
Do you?
Yeah. I just
right. Well.
Have it.
Okay. Well, I can't have it. I mean, and me and my missus have this constant battle. Can I take it to the dump? No. That's one of the children. Yeah, but it's not my favourite one, is it? It's the other one.
You are a wrong un, I swear.
Anyway.
Your children.
Anyway, I went. Now, of course I wouldn't take my children. Organic, though. It's organic, isn't it?
Yeah, that's fair.
They put them in the organic bit, not in the household bit. But anyway, I went down there, and I did all the... I got rid of the grass and the nettles and all that stuff. My arm is covered. I look like... I look like I've been taking drugs all week. I look like Michael Gove. That's what I look like. I look like a Tory leadership candidate all week. I've got bits all over my arm, but I haven't. It's just nettles, right? Jesus, Michael Gove. Who'd have thought? Who wouldn't have thought?
Look,
who wouldn't have thought? Anne Whittaker had to be on drugs for years, the nonsense she's been coming out with, but the rest of them as well. Is there any leadership candidate who hasn't taken drugs? Anyway, we'll get to that. So I got rid of all that stuff and I cleared a load of the garden, but it's physically demanding. That's the point. And I quite like it. You know, I quite like the gardening, but it is physically demanding.
Hate it with a passion.
Do you?
Oh, I hate it. But it's got to be done sometimes, isn't it?
Of course,
these are the type of days I would do it on.
What, on wet days?
Yeah, because you can't do it, can
well,
you?
Well, I see.
That's
see.
That's the way I roll.
Right,
it's
okay.
It always rains when I go to do the garden.
I used to have a joke that I used to do. I'd throw myself in front of a train for my children, particularly on a Sunday because it's a replacement bus service, right?
That's not
which is it's a nice joke. It's a nice joke. My kids really like that joke. Anyway, so I did. That's what I've done this weekend. Gardening.
How's your back?
Well, I'm okay.
Pilates has helped.
It has. No, but I also got this... I basically Epsom salts. Yeah, I had Epsom salts.
Blimey, that is old school.
Stick them in the bath.
Yes, mate.
And just lie in the bath late at night. And
well,
then
I didn't know they still did them.
They do
that
do
is
them.
Old school.
They do them. They sell them somewhere, and you three handfuls of salt in there, and it all calms you down. Honestly, I had a very I don't know. I mean, honestly, if I start smoking a pipe and wearing slippers, shoot me. I'm doing gardening. I've done all the other stuff.
You're using Epsom salts.
And I'm using Epsom salts. I know. I had a Horlicks before I went to bed. Do people still drink Horlicks? I don't know.
But you can find it.
I guess you can. Anyway, that all happened this weekend. What were you up to? Anything much? Sport.
Watched absolutely everything. And the gym. Been down the gym doing a bit.
Have you?
Sport. Just watched absolutely everything. The cricket, the tennis.
There's quite a lot of
football.
There was quite a lot of it.
Formula
One.
There was just. And you're just flicking every channel.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's talk about. We talk about the Grand Prix, right? It's. I'm watching the highlights of the. Well, we're watching Sebastian Vettel walking out, taking the second place. Well. I can't blame him. I've got to be honest with you. I cannot blame him. I watched the race. And, all right, for those who don't know, basically, Sebastian Vettel won the... he finished first in the Grand Prix, the Canadian Grand Prix yesterday, but he was awarded a five-second time penalty. I'll tell you what. Let's actually have a listen to people who can describe it better than me. This is from Sky Sports.
Ted, you can't see this, I don't think, but Sebastian Vettel taking the number two from where his car should be, putting it in front of Lewis Hamilton's car, and then putting the number one in the blank space where his car should be. He thinks he's number one today and should be number one. And I tell you what, over 305,000 people came to Montreal this weekend. Not any of those are going to persuade him he's wrong.
Right, well, that was from Sky Sports. Basically, that was describing the moment I was just saying that Sebastian Vettel walked into the winner's enclosure, I think they call it, the paddock.
Yeah.
The paddock. Oh, and it walked into whatever it's called. And basically, he didn't drive his car in. He left his car, pushed it into the FIA bit, and then walked to the winner's enclosure and moved the number one from in front of Lewis Hamilton's car and put it in front of the blank space where his car should have been. And this because he got a five-second penalty.
Yeah.
Now, I was watching it when it happened, and it was a slightly dangerous bit of driving, but I don't think he had a choice because he said on the radio, he was quite funny, he went, No, this is not the way I should lose the race. But he had grass on his wheels,
yeah.
So he couldn't steer properly. Did he cut across? Well, it's one of the little tricks you use to stop people passing you. Is it dangerous? It's motor racing. It's inherently dangerous.
Did he deliberately try to stop Hamilton getting past?
They do it all the time.
Of course they do.
They do it all the time.
Of course they do. But if I remember rightly, who was it? Was it Verstappen, I think? I think the year before had been given a time penalty for doing the same thing. So there's previous for it. There definitely is previous for it. But I mean, this is huge.
Well, it is huge because you can't... We watched the entire race, right? The two of them are racing.
Yeah.
Hamilton is between 1.5 and half a second behind him, and he's pushing him. And if he gets on the straight and he can put down, what is it, the DRS or whatever, and he can get past him on the straight, but he has to get close to him in order to have a chance of overtaking him. So he's pushing and pushing. And Vettel knows he's there and he's pushing as well.
Fighting him off.
And the two of them are pulling ahead of the rest. It's really great racing. And then that happens and you think, and they give him a five-second penalty and about four laps later that was. And then you're watching it going, well, there's no point in anything.
Yeah,
there's no point in Hamilton trying to overtake him because Wyatt, there's no bother. He's got 5 seconds.
As long as he
stays
close enough, there's no problem, is it?
Stay within 5 seconds and he's got it. And Vettel can't get away from him.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the race. And you think, why?
We've been cheated.
Why do that?
Yeah.
So I understand the point that he cut across Lewis Hamilton. He said that, I think it was disingenuous of him to say Lewis Hamilton could have gone up the inside because he couldn't have gone up the inside.
I agree.
Because that's where that's not where he was.
Yeah.
And also Vettel could say, I'm taking the race in line, which he was.
Yeah.
But Lewis Hamilton saw that chance, tried to nip out the inside, Vettel shut the door. Mm. I don't think anyone would have complained if they didn't do the 5 second penalty.
But the mistake from Vettel is allowing that gap. I mean, what the thing about Vettel, I think he's more angry at himself because yet again it appears when under pressure he just falters a little bit.
Well, that's what, in the Mercedes garage, that's what they were saying, by the way, that they were saying, that the guy was talking to Hamilton on the radio, said, you forced a mistake, because Lewis said, didn't want to win it like this.
Yeah.
That's what he said on the radio after, and then, and they said, look, Lewis, you forced a mistake, just take it.
You
why not?
It's part and parcel of the race. You force a mistake, he makes a mistake, he forfeits the winner's enclosure. Yeah, the number one. And even though, I watched that and I just thought, you know them minutes you see it where his head's gone? Complete head's gone.
Yeah, I know, but I like that.
But the thing about it is that doesn't look great. And you look back on it, they're going to be those little moments that people look back on. You know,
Mercedes are going to win this championship.
No, I'm talking about
miles.
For Vettel, it's just there's a decline in him, and now there's an emotional aspect of him as well as the mistakes. It's that you know, as you were talking about him walking over, I was sitting there thinking, yep, he's just climbed out of the pram where he's chucked his toys out as well. Because it was almost like that. It was so childish.
You know what? I know what you mean, but I guess from his point of view, he was really, really annoyed because he thought, hang on a minute. I raced a great race. I mean, I was first in that race, aside from when I pitted the entire race.
But he made a mistake. He made a mistake.
I guess
listen,
you could say
48
that.
Hours ago, an England centre-half got vilified for making a mistake.
Not by me.
Yeah, but by everyone else for making a mistake.
All right, I get
that.
You
have to get on with that.
You know what? We're going to be talking about that through the morning. I enjoyed it anyway. I enjoyed the Canadian Grand Prix. But the point
proper
is
race.
The next one is the French Grand Prix in 2 weeks' time. And that one favours the Mercedes. That'll be seven, eight wins in a row, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's procession
now. I mean, we don't need that. And like I say, I understand that Vettel might have made a mistake. But it doesn't... The championship does not need
race,
that. I tell you what was brilliant, right? Afterwards, they went into that. They have a little room where the 1, 2, 3. And that was awkward.
Yeah.
That was an awkward room. Uh-huh. There's no doubt. Lewis Hamilton said, tough race. And Vettel went, And then they sat in separate chairs and didn't look at each other. I mean, it was really funny. But what can you do?
Yeah, they have cameras on them too, so they got to behave.
Yeah, they
can't
do.
Can't lose it.
Well, no, the thing is, I mean, to be fair, Vettel and Hamilton get on pretty well.
Yeah.
They're I wouldn't say good mates, but they get on pretty well. And Vettel knew it wasn't Hamilton's decision at all. And Hamilton wasn't calling for it. But he did say that he cut across him, which he did. But I don't know. I quite like seeing that in racing. I genuinely do. I mean, I really enjoy it.
Well, you want that competitive edge. You do want that edge to be there. Because if not, what are you watching it for? Well, what you're watching it for these two, you know, these two fantastic racers really, you know, pushing the envelope, which is what they were doing yesterday. Let them race.
Wow.
They realise it's racing with conditions.
I quite enjoyed that exciting moment, and I'd like to see more of them.
This is Love Sport.
We were reading this headline at Danny Rose saying he might be leaving the club this summer.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. Do you know what? They report this stuff.
Yeah.
And I think, okay, well then, if he leaves, he leaves. And if he stays, he stays.
Well, he was a little bit like that, actually, when
he said,
Yeah,
well, so what's the news? I don't quite understand what the news is.
Well, he's got a couple of years left. And it is a bit of a surprise because Ben Davies is there. I think he's injured at the moment. And they've sort of been duking it out between them. But, you know...
Yeah, Ben Davies has made plenty of appearances this season.
I think they've both done well enough. I think you need to have two quality ones. But I think they want to bring in Ryan Sessegnon, don't they? So... I think is not a left back, but he's a left wing back. He's not proficient defensively.
I think Danny Rose, a couple of years ago, right, Dyer was playing in the centre very regularly.
Yeah.
Walker was on the right, Danny Rose was on the left. And Dyer was pinging these 50-yard passes.
Right.
And the two of them looked lethal.
Yeah.
Lethal. They were the best two attacking fullbacks.
They were wing backs at the
wing
time,
backs
literally.
In the country. They were really good. And Dyer knew exactly where it was. And it worked for England as well. Because you had Kane and Ali and Dyer.
Yep.
And you had Rose and Walker.
Yep.
And it seemed to work. Since then, Danny Rose...
He had a bad injury. He was out for 6-7 months. Ben Davies took over, to be truthfully honest. And... he never really recovered because he was the number one. And then he wasn't.
England
and now
number
he is
one as well.
England as well. And that, and in that time, Ben Davies, you know, sort of solidified that place. England, along came a couple of other fullbacks.
He's still probably the number one, isn't he, Danny Rose? Or is Chilwell the number one
I
now?
Think
or
Danny,
is Luke Shaw? We haven't quite sorted out that left, have we?
No, it's not been sorted out. That's the thing. Right back, you have to say Trent Alexander-Arnold, for me, is the number one.
Best in the world.
Yeah. But at left back in it for England, you're still not sure.
It's a shame that Wan-Bissaka isn't left footed, isn't it?
Yeah,
really?
That would help.
Because then we can
be
have
nailed
him.
Down.
Then you go, right, we've got two for 10 years
yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly right.
But as it turns out, and obviously Danny Rose has been through some other stuff as well. We know about the depression and the fact that he's he's come out and talked about it, and fair play to him for that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's commendable what he's done, because it, to a certain degree, opened the door for a lot of other people to start talking about.
There's been a lot more mental health stuff. I mean, we had that program on BBC with Prince Charles, Prince William.
Prince William.
Wasn't it? And Thierry Henry was there.
Danny Rose and Gareth
Crouch Southgate. And whatever. Yeah. And that sort of stuff is, I think, quite a big part because of what Danny Rose said.
I think he was a catalyst for it all, because here was a top-class player playing currently, talking about something that was a taboo subject for players within that environment.
When you played,
yeah,
you must have had, not you, but you must have known players who had mental health issues.
Oh, yeah.
But how do you deal with him then? Deal with them then?
You talk to them. But, I mean, within the group, you see, what you had was people didn't know how to deal with them. So what they did is they just backed off and labelled. He's nuts, or he's just funny, or he's just different.
Have another drink. Have another drink and shut up.
Literally along those lines. Yeah. Now,
certainly how we dealt with it as our mates. No, honestly, that
management
was.
Would say, you know, whether you're weak or strong, he's mentally not strong enough. Stuff like that. That's what the culture was like within football clubs in those times. It was something that you were conditioned not to ever talk about. People would see you differently.
How grim that was back then.
That's where we were. That's why players drunk, gambled, did anything reckless, because there's a powerlessness to all of that when you can't really. Because if you imagine, there'll be players that in those days struggling with their sexuality, which caused huge mental problems.
Yeah,
and couldn't talk about it. It's the same thing.
Well, so, still can't.
Still exactly.
I mean, let's be fair.
Can't.
Still can't.
Still can't.
That one still hasn't been sorted.
Exactly
yet.
Right. So when we talk about mental health, it's not about the things sometimes we think it's going to be. There are so many other aspects that prompt mental health, and, you know, having to suppress your sexuality,
living a lie, is one of them. And so, I guess, like you say, living a lie when it comes to being depressed and not being able to talk about it.
Exactly right.
That's another one.
Exactly right. Well, injury, all this. I mean, Danny Rose had bereavement as well as injury.
It's better than it was. I think it's better than
it was.
When you think where we are now. And you think, okay, but there's still such a long way to go. Danny Rose may or may not be a Tottenham player. That is essentially the news.
Yeah.
This is Love Sport.
I mean, you asked me, Andy, by the way, you wrote on the screen, did I get paid to write this speech? Yes, I did get paid, yes. I don't do this work for nothing. That is my job. So...
Do you think that could be a nice sideline freelance writing of best man speeches?
Well, I do that, and so do other friends of mine. Yeah, of course you do. Not just best man speeches generally, helping with CEOs of companies, need a few gags chucked in. You know, politicians. I've helped with Ed Miliband in the past, as you know, yes.
Really?
So, it wasn't the material, it was the delivery, all right, just before you were asking. So, what else what have you got, Andy? You got some other front page stories.
I'm sorry, did you fail miserably? Because I'm just looking at Ed Miliband.
No. I would have said that he shouldn't eat the bacon sandwich. He wasn't the best. Do you know what? I saw him in a room with 200 people, right? There was sort of friends and what have you. And I saw him in a room and he was really good in a room with 200 people. In a room with 5,000, it didn't quite work out.
Yeah.
Not really. But you know what? It is a sideline. Yes, of course it is. Yeah, comics are employed regularly in that sort of stuff. Andy's rustling through the papers there. What have you got?
Humorous picture. I thought this was right up your street for gentlemen who've played football in front of thousands, for gentlemen who've given comedy to thousands. Picture Ed Sheeran.
I like what he said, given comedy. I give you this comedy, ladies and gentlemen. Now take it. Anyway. Ed Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran has shared a photograph of himself, aged 15 years old, performing at a Suffolk Village fair. And he's basically stood on the side of a lorry, very gawky and pale, playing his guitar. And the only person watching is a very bemused toddler.
I've done gigs like that.
Played to one. At least he's playing to screaming fans, though.
Yeah.
Screaming
toddler. I mean, the thing is, I see what you did. Sorry.
It's absolutely terrible.
The fact that you had to point it out.
Well,
we saw it. I know. Well, look, we all have to start somewhere. And I, you know, he played Glastonbury last year, whatever it was, 180,000 people. Yeah. I'm going in a couple of weeks. I'm very excited.
I know you keep saying it.
I'm very excited.
I know you keep saying it.
Liam Gallagher's playing Christine and the Queens. I'm being dragged along by my son.
Oh.
I'm not. It's a bit too arty.
You performing?
I am performing.
Are you slumming it or are you big timing it?
Slumming it?
Yeah.
What you?
I mean, in the tent.
No.
Or are you big timing it?
No, I've got a recreational vehicle.
You're big timing it then.
Parking around the back.
You are big timing it then.
Of course I am, because
how far do you have to walk?
My people, listen,
how far do you have to walk?
I don't have to walk very far at all.
There you go, you're big timing it.
Yeah, but you know what? To be fair, my people spent 40 years wandering about in the desert living in tents. I think we've done enough, don't you? Anyway.
Once a year, come on.
No. And when was the last time you camped?
Me?
Brothers don't camp.
I was 15.
I know.
In the rain. Brother. And you are right. Brothers don't camp.
We discussed this. What else you got?
What do you fancy? Rod Stewart going back for a nostalgic...
Both of them. Whatever you say, I fancy both of them.
You
just give me
do
the...
this every time
I know,
I'm here.
You always ask me, what do you fancy? I'll take them both. Give me the first one, then give me the second one.
You've probably done this. Rod Stewart has made a nostalgic trip back to the village where he lost his virginity at 16.
I went
inspiring
back.
Inspiring his 1971 number one hit, Maggie May.
Is that right?
He's gone back for a route around his old haunts, so to speak.
I'm not... Yeah.
I don't know if they're
really, that was a really right. weird... weird choice of phrase, root around his own horse. Well, weirdly enough, I went back to the village where Rod Stewart lost his virginity as well. I just thought it was there's a plaque.
For a root around.
When he was 16.
It's quite, yeah, I thought he'd start earlier than that, considering his Rod, later life.
I don't know, people different times. How old were you?
How old was I what?
When you lost your virginity.
When you 19. Went to Rod Stewart's 19. Village.
19, how old were you?
17.
Just. I lost my virginity very late.
How old?
Oh, it's touch and go whether I get
last
here.
Last month.
Come on. Wait for the joke. And
Hold on. How old?
I was 20.
Oh, fair
20,
man.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was fair.
Held out for a while then.
Held out. No, I won't, madam. No, put it away. I'm not going near that. It stings. I'm not...
I wish I'd not said that now.
I like that you said I held out. Like I'm going, no, I will not. I'm pure, unsullied. I am. No, that's not the case. I was desperate. But desperation, do you want to? No? All right. I used to just go along a line of women. How about you? No? All right. What about you? I'll even take you. That. Honestly, it didn't. No, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like that. Dribbling desperation is really not attractive. What else you got? Give us the other story now.
I was going to go through the Sun sex survey, but I don't know whether I should now. But it says more than 1 in 10 men and women would romp with a robot.
Romp.
Romp.
That's such a Sun yeah, word, yeah. isn't it? Romp yeah. with a robot. Well,
we had to wait in life to romp.
No, but you know what? I mean, I've seen Westworld. I remember watching Westworld, the original, particularly the original Westworld with Yul Brynner. And James Brolin, I believe.
Yep,
and
right.
And the robots in that film were essentially like real women.
Yeah.
And if they looked like that, I'd romp with a robot as well.
Did you see the series Westworld?
No.
Yeah. The robots are very, very real. You'd romp with them.
Would it be? Committing adultery if it was a robot? She wasn't an organic life form. Therefore, it doesn't count. I mean, I'm just asking.
I think basically your wife decides whether or not it's adultery or not, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does.
Well, if you just look, you're in trouble.
Yes.
So don't
look. Stop looking at that robot.
Stop looking at that vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, go on.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I don't either.
I don't know how that vacuum cleaner turned up.
Anyway, 1 in 10 would. And 9 in 10 probably would, but they won't admit it. Is essentially what we're thinking about here.
And the other stuff is too smutty to read on Breakfast,
is it?
Breakfast Radio. And the next story I was going to go with, I'm studiously avoiding the Tory leadership race and Michael Gove.
Well, we did talk
already,
about it.
We've already done that.
We
and
did
basically,
talk about
there's most of them are left and there's still too many for us to talk about.
Yeah.
Gwyneth, more love news. Gwyneth Paltrow says the recipe for wedded bliss, this is divorced Gwyneth Paltrow as well, says the recipe for success is to employ an intimacy coach.
An intimacy coach?
Yeah, if you've got more money than sense.
Go on. Can we have some details?
She has enlisted the help of intimacy coach Michaela Bohm, who has advised her that relationships need polarity to keep things fresh. Such coaches have become a fad amongst the Hollywood A-list.
That's, you know what? They probably charge about £400 an hour. Intimacy coach.
More than that.
Oh, yes, I'm an intimacy coach. I'll teach you intimacy.
What does polarised need polarity? Does that mean you just go off and sit on your own?
I think it would probably mean is that you have to have sort of different interests. Something like that, that meld with each other. I don't really know.
What it actually means is ka-ching. That's what it means. I'm a coach. As far as I'm concerned, that for me is a nonsense. Because that person does not know me, doesn't know our relationship, doesn't know what happens behind closed doors.
I don't know. I mean, maybe...
I can go into your place and say, listen, no, you two are doing it wrong. You're far more experienced than me, but you're doing it wrong.
It's a bit odd, isn't it? If I'm an intimacy coach, I would say to her, stop steaming your nunu, right? And just concentrate a little bit more.
And that'll be 500 quid,
thank you. And that'll be 500 quid, thank you very much. Something like that.
Same time next week.
Her other tip is separate houses, which sounds brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Key to a long-lasting marriage is an intimacy coach and then separate houses.
Oddly enough, I would have done that. I actually would have done that if we had the money. I would live next door to each other.
Helena Bonham Carter and Tim Burton did that, didn't they?
Why would you do that?
They lived in two houses knocked into each other. Right?
Why would I do that? Yeah. I don't know. I need my own space, that sort of stuff.
Can't you have your own space in your own house?
We
have our own space. Like, you know, she'd be in one reception room, I'd be in the other, my wife. And sometimes we'll sit together.
All right. We'll see how it goes. Sometimes. We have an hour together each day.
We may do.
Darling, you can come into my reception room. I like that you have two reception rooms as well. That's quite nice. I just thought it'd be nice just to live next door, but not... So, you know, if we've got kids, then maybe once in a while you take the kids and put them in their house. And then you have them for the next 6 months. And then I'll have them for a couple of days after that. That seems to work out well, doesn't it?
That's fair, isn't it?
Anyway, we haven't all got the money that... who was it?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
She doesn't live
all
in this
world.
All the
common sense, clearly.
She doesn't live in this world.
You two could live together. Your partners could live together and then you two could live in a different house.
What?
I don't know what his habits are.
Be fine.
I don't know what his habits are. Listen, I'm very particular about who I live with. I've got to know what his habits are, mate. I'm telling you.
Okay.
What habits have you got?
Well, none that I can really broadcast, I'll be honest with you.
This is Love Sport.
I met Bob Crowe once. Did I tell you this?
No, go on.
The ex-leader of the RMT. Yeah. Remember him?
Yes, I do.
And the thing was, I didn't recognise him straight away. This is back in the day when you could smoke on the trains.
Okay.
And it was a rammed train, and the only place to sit was in a smoking carriage. And there's a geezer sitting there, and there's no doubt that he's a geezer.
Yeah.
He's got a big Millwall shirt on, bald head, and he's puffing away on cigarettes. And I can I sit down? Yeah, mate. Yeah, all right. And I sit down next to him, and I just suddenly thought, I know, you're Bob Crowe, aren't you? And we got chatting about mainly football, actually. But he's proper Millwall.
Oh, he's big time Millwall. Yeah, I've been
Millwall
in his company before.
Yeah, yeah.
Big time Millwall, yeah.
But we got on very, very well.
Yeah.
And we were on a train. I thought it was apt that we can have a little chat for a couple of hours. Anyway, sadly...
You meet some people, didn't
sadly
you?
Passed away.
Yes, he has.
Yes, he has. And as I used to do a joke saying, they buried him underground, which is what he would have wanted. Which I was always like that joke. People would really laugh, and then they go, oh, what? I think it's funny, isn't it? I'm sure he'd enjoy that. Anyway, this is the Comedy Breakfast on Love Sport Radio. Coming up to 7:44. Let's talk about the Women's World Cup. England opened their World Cup campaign with a narrow victory over rival Scotland in a game where they showed glimpses of their potential. And Nikita Paris got, and Ellen White gave England a 2-0 lead before the Scots set up a grandstand finish thanks to a late goal from Claire Emsley. Joining us now is reporter for Sportsbeat and co-host of the Women's World Cup show, Ella German. Good morning, Ella.
Good morning.
Morning. Yeah, win. And the first 60 minutes, they were good, but not totally convincing.
That's it. I think, on the whole, the performance was really promising. I didn't necessarily expect us to come out with 3 points. I thought Scotland were going to be a tough team, and they did show that as well.
Ella, this is a team we beat 6-0 in the Euros a couple of years ago.
They've come on such a long way, though. The squad that they have is impressive, but they didn't step up to the challenge as much as England did yesterday. So, yeah, you're exactly right. The performance we gave in the first 60 minutes was really promising, I think. We looked a little bit leggy after that, but hopefully that's something we can improve on going into the rest of the tournament.
Elle, do you think it paid the price a little bit for rotating the side, you know, up to the tournament? Because we weren't in good form and, you know, we played well in the first 60 minutes, but the minute they scored Scotland, like you say, things sort of took a turn for the worse and could have ended up with a draw, really. But they got the job done. But do you think that his rotation of the side coming up to the tournament maybe have played a part?
I'm not sure. I think he picked a good 11 yesterday and they did step up and perform. I was quite pleasantly surprised, actually, with how well we did play. I think the fact that we rotated so much is always going to be a bit of a worry. But going into a World Cup, I guess, on the flip side, you need to know that you have those players on the bench who could step in and perform. The likes of, you know, Georgia Stanway being on the wings, waiting to come in at any moment for when Frank Kirby maybe isn't at the best of her games. That can maybe only be a good thing to really push the players to perform to their full potential.
I wanted to talk about Nikita Paris a little bit. There was one moment in the first half, she did a turn that just actually got me out of my seat when she beat the fullback. That's what this tournament needs, isn't it? A couple of moments like that when you're out of your seat going, that's the skill that we want.
Exactly. And when we see things like that, that's only going to get more and more people watching the Women's World Cup to see the quality of football that is on display.
Well, in terms of the coverage of the game then, I mean, the BBC really led with it. It was their main sports story. I mean, if England, and this is, we're talking about this country, right? Because there's plenty of other countries where women's football is doing very well as well. But if England win the Women's World Cup, that could be a tipping point, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the extent of that tipping point really depends on how far we go in this tournament. So I'm hoping that we can get better and better with each game. As we progress through the stages, that should hopefully get more and more people watching and getting them off their seats with hopefully more moments of quality like that.
Yeah.
You know, Ella, I actually think we're in a good place. I think that the one thing, I had a friend of mine ring me yesterday and we were having a conversation while the game was going on, and he was sort of saying, you know, it's very different, and he was sort of talking about the difference between women's and men's football. And I think the mistakes that some men have is that their frame of reference is men's football. And so they're expecting that kind of dynamism and power and pace, and it's too slow. And actually, it's quite technical. It's very tactical, and it's a really good watch if people can get men's football out of their head. Does that sort of make sense?
Yeah, I think that's vital. I think the way I look at it is football is football. Ultimately, you're watching the same game with the same rules, and that's exactly it. I think so many people will turn on the women's football game and the first thing they will do is draw comparisons with the men's. And it really, really frustrates me because people might look at, okay, there's a moment in the game last night where Lucy Bond didn't play a very nice back pass to Karen Bardsley.
Yeah.
People go, ooh, women's football. But you turn on any men's game and you'll see moments like that. You'll see moments
where
people slip up.
John Stones last
exactly.
week.
Exactly. So I think, for me, football is football. And I think what I'd say to those people is, I don't see why you don't want to get involved. If you follow men's and women's football and see them through the same lens, you've got a major tournament to look forward to every single year. And what's not to love about that?
No, quite. Listen, Ella, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us. That's Ella German, co-host of the Women's World Cup show and reporter for Sportsbeat, talking about England v Scotland yesterday, as Susie McCabe. A mate of mine and a comedian is going to be coming on later on, and we'll have a little chat with her about the England-Scotland game. Scotland have come on as well, by the way.
Yeah, they have. They lost 6-0 the last time, but the last time they didn't have a lot of their stars. Your Kim Littles and people like that didn't play. They played this time and they looked a decent side and they were in the game, and that's the most important
thing. Is it composure? Is that what's going on? I saw a couple of moments yesterday when the players were lacking a bit of composure. When you watch the top level men's game, most of the time, I mean, it still happens. Of course, John Stones looked like a newborn giraffe the other day defending against Memphis Depay.
Yeah.
But is there a little less calmness in those pressure situations?
I suppose so. But see, women's football is getting better because more of the players are now becoming full-time. You know, in the time where I ran women's football, let's say at Charlton, they're training Tuesday, Thursday evening.
Yeah.
That was it. And then they'd be at work or uni and stuff like that. Now that they're becoming more professional, for example, as players, we'd have the afternoon doing extra training.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many things that players that male players got that women players didn't get. So they're going to be a little bit behind in their development compared to men. But that is the problem. Where you're saying composure, you're comparing it to men because that's where your frame of reference is. That's not a negative. I'm not saying, you know, but that is, unfortunately, that gap is never going to be closed. So we have to look at it slightly differently.
Yeah. The other thing, by the way, I was watching a bit of the China-Germany game.
Yeah.
They were putting some tackles in China. A couple of times.
China, Korea, they don't muck about, mate.
They didn't mess about.
But they don't muck about.
No, it was quite fun to watch.
Yeah, they don't muck about.
Rather irate German ladies. What are you doing?
You're not supposed to kick us like
anyway, this. Anyway, no, it was great. It was fun to watch. Rafa Nadal won the French Open yesterday, beat Dominic Thiem in four. I was sort of disappointed that Djokovic wasn't in the final because I think Djokovic would have given...
He would have gotten the five sets.
Would have given Nadal more of a game.
Yeah.
But Nadal on clay is awesome. He is awesome.
I'm watching him and I don't know what it is. I'm just watching. And I felt sorry for Dominic Thiem because he tried so hard. He won a set, but then physically... He just couldn't stay with Nadal. And I don't know what that is.
I mean, in the end, Thiem is a worse version of Nadal is what he is. He plays the same game.
Same game, yeah, but same not game, as well.
But not as well, but no one plays as well
but
as
how?
Nadal.
How? I mean, I can't work that out. Our one player is by a street superior to everyone else.
On clay, there's no doubt he is. He's won 18 Grand Slams now. I mean, the situation is Federer's got 20, Nadal's got 18, Djokovic has got 15. I don't think Federer's winning another one. I genuinely don't. I don't think it'll be his best chance.
But the French could cost him. Because he went to the semi-finals, it depends on how fresh he's going to be.
Listen, he felt he could compete in the French and he played well, but in the end, Nadal just tore him apart, really. I mean, it is conceivable they could all end up on 20.
Yeah.
It is conceivable. And then, you know, it doesn't really matter who the greatest of all time is. At the moment, Federer's got more Grand Slams.
It will always be Federer for me. I don't care because of again, there's an emotional attachment with me to watching him play. But I look at Nadal and if he's fit, he's winning the French for the next two or three years.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So if he takes up any of the others, he goes past 20.
Yeah.
And when he goes past 20, I don't think, like you said, I don't think Federer's going to catch him.
I think Djokovic might beat them both, though.
Djokovic
has got a chance. He's won three, the last three. Yeah. He can certainly win Wimbledon and the Australian and the US.
I think he could win the lot. I think he could win the lot because he was going for all four, wasn't he? If he'd won this one, he'd hold all four. The only person to do it twice. So he's capable. If he stays fit and clear and mentally strong, then yeah, I think he's the one who'll go past.
And I watched a little bit of the women's final. I didn't see a lot of it. Ashley Barty beat Marketa Vondrousova in two and sort of deserved to, really. Vondrousova didn't really... She was quite often, I mean, I was listening to the commentary and they said it's rare that people in their first Grand Slam final win that Grand Slam because it's the occasion. You just walk out and go, oh my God.
Well, Vondrousova's game was a semi-final where she beat Jo Konta, where she showed incredible maturity and composure to get across the line because really, Jo Konta should have beaten her.
Yeah.
She's up in both sets, serving for them and crumbled mentally, in my opinion.
You can say the same about Dominic Thiem then. His game was the semi-final when he beat Djokovic.
That's it. And in the final, you know, Barty was just never allowed Vondrousova to play. It's as simple as that. And she was just far too rugged for her and far too strong and knew too much. And it's brilliant to see. It's far more competitive than the men's, the women's.
Yeah, and I mean, three out of the four semi-finalists in the men's were Nadal and Federer and Djokovic.
Andy Murray would have been fit. He'd have been there.
He may well have been there, you know? And Stan would have been close by as well. It's the same people. But that can't last forever, can it? I mean, they can't keep going.
Hold on, we were saying this 4 or 5 years ago. And then 2 or 3 years ago. It can't, can it?
It's ridiculous.
It is.
Well, at the moment, it does seem to be going very, very nicely.
Love sport.
Andy has come in with some back page stories. Andy?
Yeah, absolutely. We had the latest in Hearn Watch earlier on. Barry Hearn talking about his thoughts on AJ Anthony Joshua's defeats. We've got Hearn Jr. now. Eddie Hearn in the Mail talking about he was about to chin me. This is his recollection of his confrontation in the ring that was played everywhere with Anthony Joshua's father, Robert. After Anthony Joshua lost, big surprise defeat against Andy Ruiz, Robert Joshua came into the ring and had a confrontation with Eddie Hearn. And instead of playing laying it down, Eddie Hearn said he was about to chin me. We don't talk like ever, and it was a bit of a shock at the time, he says.
Like ever.
Sounds a bit like Clueless.
He's like a valley girl or something, Eddie Hearn. Anyway,
what was it about? I never got to the gist of what it was actually about.
I mean, there was the thought that maybe the training wasn't right, that Anthony Joshua got dropped in training, which does happen on occasion, right? And Robert Joshua, Anthony's dad, was obviously not happy with the way the fight panned out. I guess he wanted to take it on someone. A little bit like the crowd having a go at Lewis Hamilton when, you know, it was nothing to do with him. Mm. Same thing. I guess Robert Joshua is having a go at Eddie Hearn. Eddie Hearn's only the promoter. Maybe have a go at Rob McCracken, the trainer, but not Eddie.
Eddie says, he being Robert Joshua, Anthony's dad, he said he was unhappy with the house, the setup of the house, with the referee, a whole load of stuff. He was gunning for everybody, but unfortunately I copped on TV.
Yeah, that's it. He was just genuinely not happy with the way it had gone, obviously, because his son had lost 3 world titles in the last 20
and
minutes.
The manner of it as well.
And the manner of it, and I just think he was gutted.
Yeah, he said he carried on round the back until Anthony Joshua went in and intervened and said, Dad, it's me, it's on me, I lost, no one else's fault.
Exactly.
That's all that was said.
Exactly, and at that point it'd be okay. Emotions are running high.
It's interesting, obviously, Eddie Hearn's paid to look after Anthony Joshua, not his father, but it's interesting he says he never speaks to the father. I mean, I don't know whether that hints at some sort of unease in the camp anyway. I don't know how intimate normally these camps are.
I think it's interesting that the two of them are writing different articles or being interviewed in different articles in different newspapers one day after the other. It seems that doesn't seem particularly functional as a family.
Are you on about Eddie and Barry?
Eddie and Barry.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I was on about Eddie doesn't necessarily speak to Anthony Joshua's dad very often. I don't know how he.
Why should he? Why should he speak to his dad?
That whole thing is strange. I mean, sometimes there's no need to speak to the dad. Mm. There'll be, you know, tickets and stuff like that, yeah. But when it comes to tactics and or arrangements, the dad has absolutely nothing to do with him. Unless he's his manager, which I don't think he plays that part. So the dad has nothing to do with it whatsoever.
You're right, it is interesting about Barry Hearn doing one interview, which we talked about, and we'll talk about again shortly, I'm sure, in the Times yesterday, talking about his thoughts. Eddie Hearn talking to another newspaper again about something else. And
I'm not happy with that.
Yeah.
If I'm Anthony Joshua, I'm not happy with that.
But he's got bigger fish to fry.
He has bigger fish to fry. Let's be fair,
Anthony Joshua has to look in the mirror and go, what happened there?
But the problem you also have is there's almost, it sounds like, infighting within his own team.
Yeah.
So is this something that's been coming? Or is it just something that's a byproduct of what's happened?
Perfectly fair question. And you know what? I don't know the answer to that. But it doesn't seem like a happy camp.
No one.
We've had Lennox Lewis calling for Rob McCracken to be sacked. We've had Anthony Joshua's dad kicking off with Eddie Hearn. We've had Eddie Hearn's dad writing a very unsubtle piece in the Times saying that this Joshua will never be the same. I mean, there are obviously serious tensions in there.
There's ways of selling a fight, and this isn't it.
Eddie Hearn could have just said, look, this stuff in the ring with Anthony Joshua's dad, it was sunny and nothing, got heated, all blew over, all mates now.
Yes.
To say, oh, he nearly chinned me.
Yeah.
You know, I know that we like publicity and drama and the theatre of promoting a boxing fight, but it works because we're all talking about it now. Mm. But I don't know. I don't know whether that... Does that needle you a bit?
It doesn't help, does it?
It,
I don't think it's helping. Okay, fair enough.
Doesn't help.
What else you got?
We have got more stuff. Are you interested in Real Madrid having a big clear-out sale? Everything must go.
You know what? I'm not surprised that they're getting rid of players. I mean, listen, they've got to get rid of players because they're buying. They bought Eden Hazard over the weekend. Looks like they're going to get Christian Eriksen, possibly. They'll buy a few others.
Bought centre forward already, haven't they?
Have they?
50-odd million pounds.
Luka Jovic has come in for 62 million quid from Frankfurt.
That's
he obviously
right.
played against Chelsea in the Europa League last season. Hazard, speaking of Chelsea, has come in for 130 million. All kinds of talk of, Eriksen coming in, can they afford him? They've got clear £250 million to meet financial fair play.
Right.
This is
or
if,
the Spanish government will write it off by buying a car park for £1 billion.
Or
something like that. Maybe that'll work.
But this has put, obviously, you know, they use the term red alert in these tabloid stories.
Red alert for what?
Well, everyone's on red alert to buy Real Madrid's junk, which could include Gareth Bale.
Hardly junk. Gareth Bale? My God. I mean, Wayne Rooney has come in the paper today saying that Man United shouldn't buy Gareth Bale. You know what?
What Gareth Bale are you buying? That's the problem
I mean, obviously, they've had problems with buying overplayed, overpriced players in Sanchez.
Yeah, but he's been injured
The thing about Bale is
he's going to be a hefty amount, okay? And he'll sell shirts. There's no problem with that. But where's his body at? because if you look at Real Madrid for the last year, the biggest problem they've had is frustration. It's not about his ability, it's about his frustration about him being injured. He's had a stop-start season. Yeah. You don't know, he's 29, he's had a season and a half full of injuries. He's missed a hell of a lot of games. It's a hell of a lot of money.
It's a risk.
It's a hell of a risk.
But it is Manchester United, and they've obviously got pots of money.
But they've got Alexis Sanchez, so they know what risk is.
Yeah, and if they get rid of some of them, and they can probably afford Gareth Bale. But yeah, they are having a clear out, man.
Yeah, we'll speak to our Spanish football expert, Will Fawkes, about this later on. But there's a whole list of players, from goalkeepers, strikers, and all sorts of players that Arsenal, Tottenham may or may not be able to afford.
Yeah.
A little bit of cheeky news. Ronaldo being cheeky. Who would have thought it? Who would have thought it? Apparently, after winning the Nations League yesterday and shaking the hands of various players, went up to Matthias de Ligt of Holland and Ajax, and soon to be of someone else, and said, "You should be joining Juventus. Come
Barcelona.
And play for a real team."
He's going to Barcelona, right? But he's saying you should come and play for Juventus, come play for a real team.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, Juventus like need that. To replace their defenders, don't they?
Yeah,
they are getting on a bit. Chiellini, Bonucci, the rest of them. And De Ligt would be an outstanding player. But he's going to Barcelona.
You can't turn down Barca.
I mean, he's going to Barca, and he's going to play next to Gerard Piqué. Yeah. And he's going to have Messi playing against him in training. He's going to become very, very good.
It's a bit sunnier than Manchester as well, isn't it?
Well, that helps.
Yes, so's Turin, to be fair. But actually, no, Turin is...
On occasion.
Sort of,
on
occasion.
Yeah. Look, it's cheeky, but nothing more than that. I imagine he had a bit of a smile on his face, Ronaldo, when he said it.
Quite possibly. He possibly winked. Bring back the wink of Ronaldo.
Okay.
Remember that? Remember the fury of Ronaldo winking at Rooney?
Rooney sent off. Yeah, well, I was annoyed with him. I mean, he did get Rooney because he got Rooney sent off.
Rooney should have known better.
Yeah, well, we knew it was Wayne Rooney, though.
But that's
just
what
wound
I'm saying.
Up a child.
So
we understand that.
That's why I'm very smart. You know, get the best player sent off.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. I mean, this hardly seems news anyway, this.
It's
Ronaldo just saying something to De Ligt. I mean, is this it? The sayings of Cristiano Ronaldo?
Well,
I
was just
trying to think about,
trophy.
You know, with the Dalai Lama. You know, I was in a bookshop the other day, and there was one of those, the sayings of the Dalai Lama, one of those books.
Uh-huh.
Do people just follow him about? Saying, have you got anything to say then, Dalai?
Hold on.
Not now. I'm just going to the loo. I'll write it down. No, don't write it down. I'm actually going to the loo. That's not a saying. I just need a go.
Because he has got sayings, isn't he? He's got loads.
I told you I used to follow the Dalai Lama on Twitter.
Oh,
I mentioned
you?
This, yeah.
No.
And he wrote something on Twitter, like, you can only find true happiness through rejecting negativity. And I'm like reading it going, yeah, Dalai, that is nice, right? I know him, you know. And then Sheffield Tony, who also follow on Twitter, Sheffield Tony, wrote back directly to the Dalai Lama saying, shut up, you... Anyway, it was absolutely one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Sheffield Tony, because the thing is, what I love about social media is that it's very unlikely. Sheffield Tony and the Dalai Lama are very unlikely to meet in any other...
Yeah.
I imagine they move in very different social milieus.
I would agree with
that. But through the power of Twitter, Sheffield Tony can sit in his van. I reckon he's got a van. In his
Who
vest.
Is Sheffield Tony?
He's a bloke I followed for some reason. I don't know why. I stopped following him. I stopped following him when he was rude.
You gave him such reverence that I was thinking, who
Sheffield
is he?
Tony.
No. He's a bloke. He's called Sheffield
bloke,
Tony. He had
right.
about 20 followers. And he obviously had a keen interest in Chinese sovereignty of Tibet.
Right.
Maybe not. I don't know. He wasn't very happy with the Dalai Lama. Shut up, you. It was absolutely brilliant. Who says that to the Dalai Lama? No one ever speaks.
I wonder when the Dalai Lama came back with peace and love, my son.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Up yours, Tony. Your teams are rubbish, I think is what he said. Actually, I don't know. I didn't follow the conversation after that. Have you got another story?
Yeah, do you want some hand warmer news?
Yes, I know what this is about.
Good, good. Australian leg spinner Adam Zampa was spotted rubbing something in his hand when holding the ball yesterday.
Right.
And there was all sorts of talk. We've had Sandpapergate with the Aussies recently, all sorts of long history of tampering with the ball. He says that it was just a hand warmer. It wasn't something that he was rubbing on the ball. It was a hand warmer to help him grip the ball, warm up his hands, his fingers. You've been there, Paul, on a cold football field.
Yeah.
Have you ever needed a hand warmer?
I wear gloves.
I don't think
gloves,
so.
Gloves, leggings, the lot.
You need a hand warmer to help him grip the ball. I don't know, should you have a hand warmer?
Yeah,
you
should.
You can still rub the hand warmer
influence
it.
Marginal gains, anything that can help you to gain advantage, not necessarily advantage. If your hands need to be warm, then you need to have something in place to keep them warm.
Yeah, but is it fair?
Is it fair?
Is it fair
if it's legal? It's fair.
Well, maybe they should make them illegal.
Because
that's the question.
See, the thing about it is, it's not about the hands. It's about you know, if anything happens to the ball, that would be unfair.
What about a 4-bar heater? Could you take that out on a long lead?
I'd do that.
An extension,
as long as I don't have to run.
I mean, there is that. Obviously, that's slightly more cumbersome.
Yeah.
To keep down the trousers.
Yeah, I think it would be, and it would burn too. So it would be a health hazard.
It would be a hazard in all sorts of ways.
I've got to say.
Anyway, he kept his hands warm.
Apparently, it's all innocent. Just a bit of hand warming.
He won't be the only one who's got one.
I thought that's what pockets were for. It wasn't that cold yesterday, was it?
When you're out on the pitch, it can get very...
Where were they? Especially it's the oval.
It's the oval. Yeah. It was cold. And also, especially as there's a lot of standing about going on. There is a lot of... It's not like football. There's a lot of standing about going on.
Yeah.
I'd be wearing... There's times where I've been out there, I'm thinking, I'd be wearing gloves.
I'd be wearing everything I can wear. Do some star jumps.
Yeah, no, you could do all that.
Yeah.
That's where the wicketkeeper has a slight advantage.
Yep.
It's got those massive gloves.
I'd be wearing gloves and everything, mate.
Right. All
scarf,
right.
Hat, them snooty things.
Oh, this is just sort of petered out, isn't it, this bit?
This is Love Sport.
Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.